It is Locked On NBA. I'm David Locke, the Thursday host. We're on the verge of an incredible offseason. Rumors are flying about Kawhi, whether LeBron's doing this. But one man has already lived this offseason, or at least the mock version. That's Nate Duncan of Dunked On Basketball Podcast. Nate, Kevin Pelton, Dan Feldman, and Danny LaRue all got together for a mock podcast about the offseason, and we talked to Nate today to find out what he learned from the exercise and what we might have coming up with LeBron, Paul George, Kawhi, and all the rest in this amazing offseason. It's next on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Nate Duncan of Dunked On Basketball, as I mentioned, is the guest today and has put together our favorite thing we do on the Locked On Podcast Network is our NBA mock draft. It is superseded by the Dunked On Basketball mock offseason. It is 5 hours of incredible listening and really fun. Nate does it with Dan Feldman, Kevin Pelton, Danny LaRue, and Nate joins us now to talk a little bit about kind of what you learned in the process and then also the upcoming July 1st deadline. But Nate, give everybody a little bit of a synopsis, not of what happened, but of how you do this, how you structure it, and what they would get if they go listen to versions one and version two of the NBA mock offseason.
Yeah, so we've been doing this for 4 years now. Started off with Danny and Dan, and we added KP the next year in 2016, and we're all cap dorks. We all hew as closely as we can to the actual cap rules, the amount of cap space that we expect the teams to have. I play the player agent. Dan, Danny, and Kevin each take 10 of the teams, and we try to do as realistic of a simulation of the offseason as we can. And it's not necessarily about where the players end up a lot of times, because that's, you know, what an individual player wants is difficult to determine. But it is about just seeing how much cap space is out there and kind of when the music stops in this free agency game of musical chairs, which players might get left out in the cold and just how much money there is around the league. And so it was a rough go of it for me as the player agent this year.
All right. So let's first off, over the years, who's been the best GM?
Oh, that's a tough call. Everybody had 10 teams every year.
This is your what year? Fourth year?
Yeah, this is the fourth year.
We really might have to go back through the records and have our own NBA awards show where we either give LaRue, Feldman, or Pelton the GM of the year.
Yeah, well, I think Feldman is definitely – he's created, like, the funniest and – the most enduring quotes and, to the point where he has teams that he has to, his slogans during the show have shown up on t-shirts and stuff. He has teams that he has to be every year, especially because, Ernie Grun Feldman just works so well. But, other than that, it's hard for me to remember actually. I mean, we've done it so many years in a row, and then it's hard enough keeping track of what the actual transactions are every summer, that not to mention the mock ones. But we do provide for our Patreon subscribers, I'll have to go back and look at what we had last year, we do provide not only the list of all the transactions, but we also have a spreadsheet of what every team's salary cap situation looks like. So that's how realistic it ends up getting.
Well, the next step is to get Pelton to shove it into Shoney and see who actually is the GM of the year. So you act as the player agent. They all represent 10 teams each. Dan Feldman has been fired as the Utah Jazz GM, and the rumors are – no, I'm just kidding. By the way, the T-shirt this year was it Screw You or Hell No? Which was – what were the Spurs yelling at the Lakers?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was something along those lines. That was Yeah, when they tried to trade for Kawhi Leonard, those conversations went about as well for the Lakers as they have so far, at least in real life. Although it's tough because we want to get it. It takes us probably 8 hours or so to record, and we want to get it out so quickly. I'm usually like up all night trying to edit it and getting it done, because otherwise, like, real events are going to supersede it. Like the Gortat trade has already happened. Gortat ended up getting traded somewhere else in our mock offseason. But it was we try to do it in between the draft and free agency as quickly as we can so it doesn't get eliminated by real events.
But I think that's the point. You did trade – Gortat traded in your mock offseason. In all fairness, I've not gotten all the way through number two yet. But you Gortat gets traded, which is just a sign of what you think is probably – you know, it's a good sign to kind of understand what's likely to happen and what's going to happen. So give me – we've had this run, right? So we had – 2 years ago where everyone got rich, and we had last year where there was a really considerable drop. And what did you experience as the player agent in your mock draft this year that you think you can learn about what's about to happen?
Well, according to Twitter, my most common phrase during the show was, oof, after agreeing to a deal, because there really just was not much out there. And I will note that Danny, KP, and Dan are a little bit more conservative. I mean, but it's still they get carried away with the market. Obviously, like 2016, we signed some contracts that would have been absolutely terrible, just not quite as terrible as some of the ones that were signed. And there's also – it's a little different because we get more groupthink among the three of them than you would – you know, you only need one team. And so, like, the player evaluations, it's hard to get the diversity with three people that you would get with 30 NBA teams. But just generally, I mean, there are a lot of one-year deals that ended up happening, a lot of restricted free agents out in the cold, struggling with whether to take their qualifying offer. And so the teams really had a ton of leverage, especially when you consider that a lot of the teams that have cap space are not teams that are looking to get better with unrestricted veteran free agents. They're either looking to get restricted free agents and young players, or they're looking to take on bad money with half the league in the tax.
The other one that jumped out, just you sent me the list of deals. Yeah, a ton of one-year deals. But also, very few of those – there were some circumstances on day one of your thing where this one-year deals got big – but a lot of small one-year deals, right? It wasn't as though one-year deals with five teams bidding on you for a one-year deal giving you a bunch of money. Some pretty good players on one-year deals for $6 million, $8 million, $4 million, $3
million. Yeah, and I thought that in real life that teams could do a better job of, because the market is so depressed, getting guys on some value contracts. I mean, this market is almost similar to 2015, where you kind of knew that the cap spike was coming. You know, there's no cap spike coming next year. I mean, it's supposed to go up by $7 million, which will help. But also, just because there's so little space around the league, you're really kind of artificially limited in what teams can pay. So if there are players who are willing to lock in for longer-term deals, as there always seem to be, that teams who are willing to offer more than 1 year deal and kind of zag, because everybody's going for 2019 cap space now, and just try to get — the Jazz are a good example of this, right? Try to get players on deals where they can contribute, you know, for maybe around the mid-level exception. Starter level of players could be available for that money. And that ends up, if the guy starts for you for 3-4 years, being a great deal. You know, I thought that the GMs in the mock off season could have done a little bit better a job of that, just trying to get guys on longer-term value deals than the one-year deals. But then again, I was the player agent, and it was frustrating to me that they weren't paying my guys any money. So maybe there's an alternate perspective there. I mean, I would expect the real-life GMs to be a little bit less judicious, but there still is not much money out there.
Why is 2019 free agency so appealing?
Well, just because teams can actually have a little bit more money. So,
but, like, are there players that people really want? Like, Kawhi's not going to be a 2019 free agent.
Well, if a lot of people sign one-year deals, then yes. Okay. I mean, under this scenario, I mean, we could have players. I mean, that's the other reason players would be interested in one-year deals, maybe as much as the teams are at this point. The team, just to reduce risk, or, you know, and you could always try to re-sign the guy the next year as well to a longer-term deal, or just because – really, the players don't have any money. And so for them, I mean, maybe as an agent, it's an easier sell of, you know, all right, you be, became a free agent this year, and the money's not here, but that's just this external situation. And so we're going to hold out until 2019, and there'll be more room, but there may be more competition in players, even if there isn't necessarily at the absolute top end.
Interesting. The next question is, what do all these one-year deals do to the quality of basketball?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, right? Because everybody is trying to play for themselves in theory. I think if you're on the right team, though, in the right culture, I don't think that matters as much, especially if you potentially want to re-sign there. And I also think that just the NBA as a whole is getting better at valuing winning plays and winning players than they were 10 years ago. So the whole, oh yeah, go out and get your 18 points a game and take a billion shots and be really inefficient. I think that players and teams just have a much better understanding that, you know, guys who are gunning and are below average offensive players but score a lot of points on a bad team just aren't really worth anything.
He's Nate Duncan. He hosts Dunked on Basketball along with Danny LaRue, and they do a great job. Who were the teams that had the biggest surprises? Was he most interested in watching and seeing? We'll talk about those things coming up more with Nate Duncan here on Locked On NBA. So when you did this and you finish it, what players now, and maybe it's the same as beforehand, but what players do you think are going to have the most, are most interesting for you to watch here?
Well, the main guy to me is Paul George. And you might say, oh, well, you know, LeBron James, like, obviously he'd be the one. But it seems like potentially that his fate could be tied, if we're going to assume that Chris Paul is going to go back to the Rockets, although that could be a very interesting negotiation with some of the issues there. But if people are talking about Paul George maybe going back to the Thunder and maybe signing a 1+1, I don't think either of those particularly makes much sense. But if George goes back to the Thunder, it really makes little sense for LeBron to go to the Lakers, perhaps unless they can get Kawhi Leonard, which, you know, they have been stymieing in those efforts so far. So if George really does go back to the Thunder, then where does LeBron go? I mean, the idea of a elaborate trade to the Rockets is still possible, but, you know, it's hard to imagine the Lakers really getting where they want to go if they can't get Paul George, which seemed fait accompli a year ago. And maybe it'll still happen. This could just be a smokescreen. Maybe he just gets convinced to go to the Lakers. Who knows what this is, but George seems like the guy maybe more who will determine where LeBron goes, because you would think that LeBron would love to go to the Lakers, but if he's going to be the only star there, I don't think that it appeals that much to him in terms of winning when you got to go up against the Rockets and the Warriors in that conference.
All right, I have three hypotheses about what's going on with LeBron James and Paul George. No facts on any of them, just hypothesis, okay?
Yeah.
Hypotheses are supposed to be found in facts, so this would be suppositions. Is that a better way to say it? All right, so the first supposition I have is that never before in the NBA have we had what I would call cross-generational NBA players in cahoots together. So, in other words, we've had the teams form together where it's Durant and Curry that are similar aged with Clay and Draymond. They're all similar. You've had the team of LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. They're all similar. You have the banana boat of Chris Paul, Carmelo. They never got it done. Those are similar. Paul George and LeBron are not the same generational NBA players, so I don't believe they're in cahoots together. So that's first supposition. I do believe Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are in cahoots together. That's supposition two. Supposition three is that LeBron knows this. And that's why he's announced, I'm not doing pitches, I'll announce it soon. Because I think LeBron wants to make sure he announces whatever he's doing, whether it's going to the Lakers or not, fast enough so that he does it before Paul George acts, so then Paul George follows him.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. You know, suppositions, we could call them guesses.
Right, yeah. I don't know what the right phrase for it is, but yeah.
I'm not the type of person who puts a lot of time into, you know, reporting the big stuff like this. You know, that's obviously like Woj and those guys. So I don't have any inside information to share on this one either. But yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's PR, this idea that he's going to decide quickly, whether it's just simply to have the ability to opt in so he can trade and expand his list of destinations. Because, you know, I think Philly doesn't seem like a good fit. Lakers, you know, he can go there with the cap space, but we talked about the problems there. Houston, if he wants to go there, you know, he would have to almost certainly opt in, because if he a sign and trade likely wouldn't be possible under the cap rules, with the Houston being hard capped. So I think that could be a big part of it too, and just the PR of, like, he doesn't want to make a big spectacle out of it at this point in his career.
You want my third theory? My fourth theory?
I love your theories.
I think this has nothing to do with LeBron and championships. It all has to do with something bigger. I don't know what that is. That could be, you know, the school he built in Akron and all his programs there, right? And that's his legacy. It could be getting to L.A. I don't have any. Here's LeBron on the phone, actually, right now to tell me. hello? 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 Oh, gosh, our call broke up. Or it might have been a telemarketer. That would, by the way, just to let you know, that was a home phone. Those who still exist. A landline. Anyway, I think if you look back, this year was to prove his legacy. He's now in the conversation with Jordan. It doesn't matter what he does for the rest of his career. He'll forever be in the conversation with Jordan. We don't discredit Jordan for his last foray into Washington. And so I think this is about something bigger, whether it's being part of an NBA ownership group one day, whether it's moving his agency and his marketing platforms to L.A. so they can get into movies, whether it's building schools in Cleveland. I'm just not buying the Houston, Philadelphia, San Antonio to go win a title. I think there's something much bigger in LeBron's vision in this decision.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know him well enough. I think, a lot of people, he's not someone who I think is easily predictable in these decisions. You know, I mean, I think most people, I don't think anybody saw Miami coming the first time around. I mean, maybe they did, but it wasn't considered the key favorite. And then I think most people had him going back to Miami as well. I mean, it does seem, though, that the first two times he made the decision, going back to Cleveland, he wanted to do that. But it seemed like he made the best basketball decision for himself both times. So if you go based on history, he would make the best basketball decision for himself. But obviously he's at a different point with his family, with his career right now.
And if you talk to people that are close to him, they'll tell him he probably knew every single step of this that was going to happen beforehand. That none of it was a surprise to him. That he's not making decisions. He's not making this decision today. He made it 3 to 5 years ago.
Well, so you think with the Miami, if they win the finals against the Spurs, he leaves in 2014?
Yeah, I do.
Huh. I mean, people have talked about...
He goes back to go get Cleveland his title.
Yeah, I mean, people have talked about how he might have left Miami maybe a little bit later. The plan was to go back to Cleveland, but he might have left Miami, maybe in 2015 when he could have opted out again under those old contracts that had two early termination options.
Yeah, there you go. You have the geekdom. I have the unsubstantiated theories.
But who knows? I mean, you talk to more people than I do. Probably.
No,
so.
I mean, these are just actually, this is not me talking to people. This is just kind of, 25 years in the league trying to watch what's going on and seeing what's going on. Limited market. Is that going to hurt restricted free agents because teams can't afford to be bottlenecked? Or is it going to help restricted free agents because there's just such limited market that teams can go zero in on those players and get it done?
I think that maybe another place where we weren't quite as realistic in our mock off season was the number of guys who took the qualifying offer, because even when restricted free agents, maybe Portland and Yusuf Nurkic are in a different place because Portland would just kind of love to have his services for another year. And then, they think Zach Collins will be ready and they can't really fit Nurkic on a big deal into their salary structure long term. But for most of these teams, and maybe Jabari Parker in Milwaukee could be another one where with his injury history and the Bucks needing to be good right now and Parker being a high risk player, that there could be some chance of him leaving. And I guess you could say Orlando too, where Aaron Gordon is pretty good, but they also have another guy at their position that they drafted in Jonathan Isaac at power forward rather than Gordon. So maybe you could see those three guys as being more likely to either take a qualifying offer or get a something token back to the team and a sign and trade for another team that would be interested in them rather than signing the long-term deal. But for most restricted free agents, they're young players that were drafted by the team and they would like to retain them. And so if they don't, even if they don't have another offer elsewhere, they still can force leverage just by getting close to the start of the season, threatening to take the qualifying offer and leaving to just say, hey, you know what, maybe you're not going to give me the absolutely what I wanted, but you better give me pretty close to market value here if you really want me to be a part of the team. So maybe they might take a haircut of a couple million or so off of what they would get in a different market. But I do think that teams, especially if it's a player that they like and want to be part of their long-term plans, you know, will end up paying up in restricted free agency, maybe at a slight discount from what it would normally be on the open market. But the restricted free agents do generally have that leverage of not wanting to have him come in and just play on his qualifying offer for a year and then leave. I mean, that usually doesn't work out for the team.
Nate Duncan dunked on basketball. He acted as the agent in all the mock drafts. We're going to find out next what agents should be looking for maybe new clients after they disappoint their client coming up as we continue on Locked On NBA. All right, so if you were the player agent, which players would fire you? Not because you necessarily because of what happened to them in free agency.
Well, Will Barton is a really interesting one here. I mean, we can talk about him just in general and also in the mock. He ended up getting less, I won't say to what team, from then the four-year, $42 million extension that he turned down with the Denver Nuggets. And Barton, I think, was a little bit upset with himself for taking a three-year, $9 million deal in restricted free agency with the Nuggets, which he vastly outplayed, although that actually seemed like a pretty decent deal from the player's side back when it happened in 2015. And so he really wanted to bet on himself. He didn't want to limit himself. But, you know, they're really, again, it's tough to find a market out there of who is able to pay for a veteran free agent like him on a win-now move more than the mid-level exception. Now there's talk that maybe that he could be a target of the Pacers, but they also are going to go after Tyreek Evans. So that's, you know, one of those two guys probably is not going to get more than the mid-level exception. Maybe Barton could get it. So he ended up getting 3 years, $27 million, but he did at least get a 2+1. And that was another thing that we saw was that some of these players were like, all right, you know what? I'll take less here. I have to. I don't have the leverage to get a bigger deal. But hey, at least let me get back on the market pretty soon here. So 2+1, 1+1, hoping to get that. Sometimes teams are like, no, we want a team option because you just don't have the leverage to get anything better. But that was one. I mean, Avery Bradley had a really rough go of it. KCP, I think most of the teams were looking for guys who can defend the three, and those guys are a little bit too small for that. So that was another issue. Teams not really looking for the two-way shooting guards at this point. So those guys were kind of looking at offers around the mid-level as well.
What happened? What about the crazy big market? You had Gortat getting traded. You didn't have him going to. Everyone's saying like this is that the bigs. You know, we had this big the draft of bigs, and then we have a bunch of free agents that are interesting. Did they find no market? Did they find a market? What was your takeaway in regards to that?
Yeah, it was tough, especially because Dallas controls the market. They actually decided to focus on a cheaper restricted free agent offer for a big, and then they ended up making a trade to take on bad money. And so they were really out of the big money. We had DeAndre Jordan opt in, as it looks like he's leaning to do, which makes sense because he's, you know, I don't think he even has, you know, $60 million out there in guaranteed money for him in this market. And so when he's making 24 for next year, I guess it makes sense to opt in.
So wait a second. So he opts in. They just traded for Gortat, and we're back to real life here. So
yeah.
The Clippers know they can trade him?
Maybe they can't, but I think they, you know, that trade is a little curious in that respect for me. Because you might say that Austin Rivers, maligned as he is, plays a more valuable position than Gortat. They might try to trade DeAndre, and who knows what they can get for him. The reporting has been that they're going to try to work with him on a trade at some point this year, maybe to a team that would value his bird rights that is over the cap and would want to re-sign him next year.
Yeah, but that's $27 million, right?
Well, I mean, his bird rights doesn't mean you have to spend $27 million.
But if that team's over the cap and they're trading for DeAndre Jordan, then they got to send back $27 million worth of money to the Clippers.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be quite that much. It would be 80% of the 24 that he's making. But yeah, it's so around 20. And there's some expiring contracts. I mean, you can there might be some ways to work that. It still it wouldn't shock me if it ends up in a buyout, depending where the Clippers are next year. But that could be part of this too. They waive him and he gives back. Maybe he gives back enough that they wouldn't have any tax concerns anymore, because they're pretty close to the repeater tax, actually, which they, I'm sure, have zero interest in paying. And this would, if they don't pay the tax this year, they can get out of the repeater tax going forward, because they paid it 3 years in a row. They didn't pay it last year, so they're not going to want to pay it this year. And then that kind of resets the repeater tax clock for you.
Oh, all the fun little things, the tax and the rest of it. What?
Well, you better learn this stuff if you want to be an NBA fan this summer, because these teams are tax out.
What team was surprisingly active? Or looking at the landscape, what team's in a better power position than maybe has been talked about?
Well, I think it's interesting. Atlanta and Chicago, maybe Sacramento, this has not been their MO. As teams with space that aren't necessarily looking to get better, they are in a very good situation right now to take on bad money. If there are teams that are trying to get off of that money, then you really only have those two outs, Atlanta and Chicago right now. Each of them have about $20 million in space. And so those teams should be able to create a little bit of a bidding war. And then they also have the option, as I mentioned, there are going to be some valuable contracts that could be available for veterans if they want to bring those guys in, that they could then maybe either move them later or to just try to even move them this year, or have a guy who's a part of your core who's on a cheap contract for 3 or 4 years. So they don't necessarily have to use their money to take on bad contracts if the offers aren't good enough. So that creates a lot of leverage, and the price of moving money, I expect it to be pretty high, higher than maybe it's ever been this offseason.
Without boring people to death, because we're capable of doing that. Well, maybe I am. Maybe you're not. When you say moving money, like someone takes X contract, what's it worth now? Like Dennis Lindsay did a nice job ahead of the game on that Andre Iguodala deal where he got 2 first-round picks. Obviously, Golden State profited well off it too, but that deal kind of set the market there for about 3 years. If you take $15 million, that's a first-round pick, or that's 2 first-round picks. What is the market value right now for taking contracts?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think when we talk about relative to the cap, you could say it'd be higher. I think it's around $20 million for 1 first-round pick, but it depends on the quality of it too. If it's going to be Houston, if you go back and look at last summer, Houston's pick, they had already gotten Chris Paul at this point, ended up allowing the Clippers to get off of Jamal Crawford, who had about $17 million or so in guaranteed money left. He ended up giving back, I think, about $3 million of that to the Hawks in a buyout, which presumably had already been negotiated. So at the very back end of the first round, maybe you're talking more about $15 million or so. If it's a pick that has a little more upside, usually such a pick would be lottery protected or at least top 10 protected. That's maybe where you get up to the $20 million or so. Another interesting component of that too is, what kind of bad salary is it? Are you talking about Jan Mahimi, Evan Turner, 2 years left on these contracts, Timofey Mozgov? Are you talking about that 2 years left on the contracts? And that's now, over $30 million, $35 million. In bad salary, well, 1 first-round pick probably isn't going to get you there. If we're talking about Kenneth Faried and Darrell Arthur together for counting $20 million, but it's all done this year, then maybe a first rounder could get you off of that. So if you're impacting a team's long term planning more, that's kind of difficult. So I don't know if we'll see any of those truly toxic 2016 contracts moved, unless maybe they're in exchange for a slightly less toxic contract.
All right, final two questions for Nate Duncan. The podcast is Dunked on Basketball, their mock-off season. If your mock-off season is an indicator, what player will be running around most excited about the fact that they actually got paid and got real money, and they're so surprised and they can't believe it and they're so excited? And what player or two will be having the opposite reaction of either looking like someone put orange juice in their cereal or actually just crying in their cereal?
Yeah, well, I mentioned Avery Bradley and KCP. I think J.J. Redick is going to do pretty well because I don't expect Philly to necessarily have any better options than him. So you could see him coming back on another big, huge one-year deal. I think that Montrezl Harrell may be someone in restricted free agency that the thinking will be that he comes cheap enough and the Clippers have enough tax issues that they might not want to match an offer sheet for him. I think DeMarcus Cousins could find a pretty difficult market. I mean, really, where the offer sheet, even at something close to the max on a short-term deal, might be available. You're not necessarily seeing that. And then I think Trevor Ariza still is going to do pretty well because the Rockets, while they are in the tax, they have no way to replace him, and he's essential to what they're doing. And there's a paucity of players who can guard the three out there on the market. So I think he'll, you know, his situation is very analogous to Andre Iguodala's last year, where, you know, he probably didn't want to leave and the team didn't want to leave and they're in the tax, but he also is so essential to what they were doing. And then Jabari Parker will be a really interesting one too. I mean, between he and Aaron Gordon, you know, maybe one of those two guys gets an offer sheet. Hard to see that happening for both though.
It's really interesting. I'm trying to count right now on your list of how many players sign for something beyond the mid-level exception. And it's not very many.
Nope. No. I mean, especially non-restricted guys. I mean, what we ended up having to do was normally the way we do it is we do most of the unrestricted guys first, and teams were just holding on to their money because, again, most of the teams that have space are young teams that maybe wanted to add a younger player. So we had to let the restricted market play out first before it went back.
And even a bunch of guys were signed under the restricted with their own team, which means they weren't getting an offer, even a restricted level offer from anyone else. Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
It all starts coming up. It starts on Sunday. I love when they do this on weekends to us. It's all right. We'll be there Monday, July 2nd on NBA TV with Summer League from Utah and talking about all of it. And we'll be covering it on the Locked On Podcast Network. Nate will be covering it on Dunked On Basketball. It should be a lot of fun, and the league will look dramatically different than we expect it to. That I can guarantee you. Nate, thanks so much for the time. Keep up the great work. Congratulations on all the success and, more importantly, the upcoming nuptials.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks. Appreciate you having me.
Special thanks to Nate and Dunked On Basketball crew for that. All right, we'll be bringing you Locked On NBA every day next week with short, bite-sized, 30-minute breakdowns of all the news, all the crazy ongoings. I'll be on NBA TV bringing you the Summer League from Utah with our broadcast crew. So look for that as well. It's upon us. We'll see what happens. It's Locked On NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.